my house is haunted. And it's, and it really stinks.
Yeah.
Really stinks.
Hello, welcome to Guides the Unknown. I'm Kristen.
And I'm her brother, William.
And we are going to be talking about the Demon of Brownsville Road this week. This is something that we both just found out about today.
Uh-huh.
And it ends up being a super rich and interesting topic.
Absolutely. It is such an odd tale that continues to this day,
yes,
in some way, shape, or form.
Right.
The house where this all took place is now available as a bed and breakfast.
Well, coming soon.
Well, yes. I read an article from September which, mm-hmm, said that it was coming soon. I tried to find it so I could book it.
Yeah.
Or just see how much it cost or something. Couldn't find it anywhere.
Well, they have a website from that article that you, yeah, go to, and it just like is under construction. It just has some pictures of it.
I saw a bunch of pictures from the inside. It looks like it's ready, but...
Yeah, apparently.
Yeah, I guess we'll still have to wait a little bit longer.
Not ready for prime time. Also coming, a movie on this subject from New Line.
I know.
So we're really getting it on the ground floor.
We most certainly are.
So if you want to get on the ground floor with us, just so you know, I want to mention you can follow us everywhere on social media at GTTUpod. And we also have a Patreon page at patreon.com/GTTUpod, where we have monthly bonus episodes. And on top of those, monthly extras just sprinkled around. So if you go there right now and donate a minimum of $4 a month, there are a bunch of extras waiting for you there. And there will be a new episode uploaded on Friday where Will and I talk about Dr. Sleep.
Yeah.
We recorded it last night, and I think it's like one of the best episodes we've ever done.
I really, really enjoyed myself. It was a really good conversation.
Yes.
Not only is it coming out on Friday, so does this episode you're listening to. If,
right,
you're listening to this episode on the day of release, the Dr. Sleep conversation is out now,
yes,
on the Netherworld Dispatch. So go get it.
That's right.
Listen to this and that episode concurrently to hear, mm-hmm, the synchronicities that happen when you play them side by side.
Oh, man.
It's
that
like
push-pull.
It's like Dark Side of the Moon and, yeah, Wizard of Oz. If you play two episodes that we've recorded,
you'll go quite mad.
Yeah, you're... Your ears will start bleeding.
Right.
You know, it'll be horrible. I can't wait to hear about it.
So, Will, take us away. Tell us about the story of the Demon of Brownsville Road.
Yeah. So, a lot of this information comes from Wikipedia. A lot of it is based on a book that was written about the events, written by one of the people who experienced the events, Bob Cranmer, or, mm-hmm, something? Cranmer.
I think it's Cranmer, no?
Cranmer.
Okay, wow.
Yeah.
It's hard to say.
Like cranberry and mermaid, in that order. Cranmer. There was a family, the Cranmers, that moved into this house on Brownsville Road, mm-hmm, in Pittsburgh.
Yep.
And they experienced odd phenomenon. It's going to make you think a lot about the Amityville Horror to a certain extent, or maybe The Conjuring.
Mm-hmm.
Family moves into a house, experiences odd phenomenon. Same basic thing that's happened endless times before, but with its own eccentricities, mm-hmm, to be sure. So something that I've done here is I've written a little bit about Bob.
Okay.
What about Bob?
Right. Tell me.
Because he's kind of the figure that this all revolves around, or he's the way that we get a lot of our information about what occurred.
Yeah.
And then I've got sort of a chronology of that parcel of land and house.
Mm-hmm.
So Bob is a veteran of the Army. He also served as a Republican county commissioner for his county in Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
From 1996 to 2000. So by all accounts, he should be a reputable person. Whenever I hear these stories, I always end up thinking about, did somebody buy a house because they want to indulge in the infamy of it? Mm-hmm. Like the Watcher's House in New Jersey, which we've talked about a lot.
Right.
Do you buy that because you know you can flip it if there's a big bad ghost story? But this guy, you know, he served and he was a politician,
right,
that like won his seat.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to believe that that means...
that he's like credible.
Exactly.
And trustworthy.
So here's some of the backstory. March 1792, a mother and her three young children are killed by Native Americans during the Northwest Indian War. It was, quote, an act of terror.
Okay.
Because the Native Americans were trying to prevent the pioneers from expanding further west.
Okay.
Okay. That's part one of the story.
Okay.
The house is eventually built on that land where, mm-hmm, that mother and children were killed.
Real quick, do we know that that's true? That there were, like, is this fact? We know that that happened or what?
Here's what I'll say. I am presenting to you what is said.
Perfect.
Does that make sense?
Yes, it makes total sense.
There are naysayers who say that Native Americans certainly didn't want people to continue to take their land and were, you know, trying to retaliate and stuff.
Right.
But is it an act of terror
exactly. when you're encroaching on somebody? Whatever.
I think of like the you know, acts of terrorism, whatever. I don't want to get political.
I know.
But like when you think about that, specifically that use of language, it's very early 2000s.
There's also something else in this that I feel that way about, that there was like a very like conservative bent to this storytelling.
Yeah, I've got some more of that later as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. But so, okay. The house is finally built at the beginning of the 20th century, around the year 1910. It would be eventually designated a historical landmark because of the way this house is built. It's so old, I guess it was built in a particular style called the craftsman style, or maybe it was one of those things you order out of a catalog and it was like a Binford Toole house. Or I don't know. Either way, it's so old that it's a historical landmark is the point. Let's fast forward. I'm going to strategically jump now 78 years.
All right, time jump.
Yes, big time jump. A bunch of stuff happens that I will explain, but let's now jump.
Sure.
The land existed. There were murders there. Eventually, a house was built on that land, and eventually the Cranmers move in.
This is like a movie. Like, that was the preface. Now we're slammed into the Cranmers moving in, where our story really begins.
Exactly.
No doubt affected by what we just watched.
I'm not
heard about.
I won't tell just yet. I'll never tell.
I'll never tell.
Well, actually, I will, but not yet.
If you guys know what that is from, please reach out to us at GTTUpod all over social media. I also think that we've done that before.
We definitely have.
That thing.
I mean, we know what it's from, but we'll never tell.
We'll never tell.
So December 1988, Bob and Leza or Lisa?
I don't know.
Yeah, L-E-S-A. The Cranmers. Mm-hmm. Move into the house with their four children. Here's a quote from Wikipedia. All I know at this point is they moved into this house. Here's what Wikipedia immediately follows with.
Yeah.
They bought the house upon being transferred to Pittsburgh by his employer. Bob states that the house was his dream to own and that it mysteriously went up for sale the same week that they began looking for a house to buy.
My God.
As a young child, he would often stand and stare at the house, hoping that someday he could see the inside. And I was like, well, wait, they were transferred to Pittsburgh, so they bought the house, but he stood there as a child?
Yeah.
It's like, was he a little boy who got transferred to a new job in Pittsburgh?
Did he grow up in Pittsburgh, and then he went away and came back?
The answer is yes.
Okay.
But they didn't establish that, so they started talking about how he moved there as an adult, but he has wanted it since he was a kid. I'm like, well, you need to say that he lived there.
Right.
So eventually they explain it. But
this Wikipedia page wasn't perfectly written.
I know it's nitpicky, but Wikipedia weirdness always is fun to me. When you read something on Wikipedia and you just go like, wait, what?
What and who is that? They didn't tell me who that is.
When, where, and who did this happen to?
I know.
What is going on?
I know.
Anyway, Bob says that when they were trying to buy the house, the sellers seemed anxious to move out. So anxious were they that Bob initially gave them a very low-ball offer.
Mm-hmm.
And rather than negotiate, rather than try to get the price back up to what the house really is worth, they took his offer.
Why would they do that?
Here are the keys, Bob.
Why don't they mind? It's almost like they want to get out.
Want the keys, Bob? Jingling the keys in front of him like he's a baby. During a walkthrough of the house, Bobby Jr. wandered off into the basement and started to cry. It was as if he had seen a ghost. Lessa would also go on to say that the house seemed...
It's probably Lisa, right?
I know, but why is it L-E-S-A? I've never seen that.
I haven't either, but...
I'll just call her Lisa.
Yeah, it's
why bother to assume that her name has a different pronunciation and try? Screw it, you're Lisa now.
I think it probably is.
I guess, I don't know. She said that the house is too big, and then it gives her the creeps.
Mm-hmm.
Bob ignores this. He asks the sellers if there's anything wrong with the house. Here's a quote. Understanding exactly what he was referring to, the seller assured him that the house was fine and that Catholic Mass was conducted several times in the living room of the house.
Yeah, just like a normal house that has nothing wrong with it.
It's a totally normal place.
We've had Catholic Mass here like a bunch of times.
Constantly.
It's all good.
Yeah, we're constantly trying to have Mass here.
I'm not usually trying to have mass in the living room.
Yeah, I'm not trying to have mass right now. Bob thought this was an odd response, but took it with the reassurance that had been implied.
Okay.
Later, the next spring, Bob discovered a small metal box buried in the front yard containing Catholic religious items. He called the previous owner, who assured him that, quote, the house is fine.
That's totally normal. That just shows you how normal it is. Just like all the masses we have, that's just like another indicator of how fine the house is. So enjoy it.
You're going to love it. It's great. You got it. You got to steal. The deal of the year.
Oh, you found it? You win.
You win, Bob. You win.
That's good. That's normal.
Now, please lose my phone number.
Yeah.
The former owner says, just put it back where you found it. You got to make sure that this, like, blessing is stored under the lawn.
Wouldn't you die?
Oh, my God. Yes.
Like, okay, that's great. Oh, you found it? Okay, cool. Just put it back where you found it.
Right.
And everything's fine.
That is pretty frightening.
Yeah.
I will say, so Allie and I bought this house last year, and I have, you know, we talked about it on the show a little bit. I tried to look up, have people died here or whatever. We seem to be the third people to ever own the house. It was built in 1920. It's almost 100 years old. Mm-hmm. So I keep hoping that there's some oddity here, you know? There is a very high cabinet on the main floor in the bathroom that we can't get up to without, like, a stepladder.
Okay.
And so we haven't really had need for it, whatever, but I was curious the other day, so I opened the cabinet door and then used my phone camera to look inside.
Yeah.
There was a black garbage bag in there.
Oh.
And it looks like it has stuff in it.
Really?
Yeah, and I forgot about it. So I don't
know. Are you gonna look in it?
Yeah.
Let's do it after the show.
Do it after the show, okay.
Yeah.
It might be anticlimactic. For all I know, it was
totally
there when people
be.
When like they I were know. Taking care of the house to get ready to sell it. Maybe Allie and I did do something last year that we were gonna do up there and forgot. I don't know. All I know is that I saw on the camera, I was like, oh, there's like a rumpled bag up there. What?
You were like, Dear David. I think he did that at one point.
Oh my God, you're right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Dear David.
Yeah.
Where have you been?
In possibly, that bag.
Possibly on TV.
Oh, no, definitely on TV.
Really?
Yes. Starting on December 20th, Adam Ellis of the Dear David thing, that's the guy who wrote it. I find this very confusing. He's going to have a show, I can't remember the name of it, but where he goes to people who are experiencing hauntings and like investigates them and also tries to like help them through the ordeal of dealing with a haunting, which seems to imply almost...
So because he's been through it.
Right. And it's so clearly fiction.
No.
I know, but...
It's not.
It's crazy to me. I think it's going off of almost like a Catfish model, like where the guy wrote the movie did the movie Catfish and they had a TV show off of it. It feels like Catfish the Haunting to me.
Yeah. Maybe. Hey, whatever. Maybe it'll be fun.
Oh, I'll be there lickety split.
I know it.
But I'm just saying it's strange to me because I thought it was just so clearly... I mean, I know it's presented like it's real, but it just seems so obviously fiction, and he dropped it like a hot potato. He hasn't talked about Dear David in years.
It's almost the equivalent of whoever created Marmaduke then going on to have a reality show where he helps people with their troublesome pets. It's like, well, you drew a dog. You didn't.
Right. You didn't.
You didn't do anything.
You're not a dog trainer.
Okay.
You're
whatever.
Not Caesar Milano or whatever. Milan.
It's Caesar Milano's.
Milano's the cookies.
Yum, yum, yum.
Yum, yum.
So anyway. The Cranmers go on to experience a bunch of oddities, little odd experiences. There's a light in the coat closet whose cord, like the pull cord, continually wraps around the bulb.
Okay.
It does not hang down, and that doesn't really make sense.
Mm-hmm.
They find icky goo on the floor.
Yeah.
And on a TV show that you suggested I watch, Paranormal Witness True Terror.
Yeah. Did you watch it?
I did.
Nice. They didn't pronounce the lady's name on that show?
I don't remember.
I was going to ask you about that. Like, didn't you watch that show? They must have said her name, and then I figured you must not have watched it.
I did, and yet I still don't know somehow.
Okay, that's fine. Go ahead.
It's almost as if maybe a demon prevented me from being able to remember. I watched it really closely. So anyway, there's icky yellow goo on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the sons, now grown up, describes it as having been like jello that hasn't completely hardened.
Ugh.
Just stuck on the floor.
Viscous.
The house is just kind of old and obviously has a lot of like history and strangeness to it. There's a big furnace in the cellar. And then at one point, their son gets terrified. He sees some strange man wearing circular glasses.
Oh.
Mm,
spooky. Yowie.
Spooky, spooky. All right. Here's some things that happened. There's a guy, Father Ron, mm-hmm. starts calling Bob Cranmer and being like, Bob, I need you to go to the top of the stairs and turn left.
What?
There's a room on the left there. Do you know what I'm talking about? And he's like, yes. How can you possibly know about this house? Father Ron just all of a sudden is like some sort of a bystander. What's mm-hmm. it called? Like a good Samaritan.
Okay.
Calling in to try to help the Cranmers deal with their situation out of the blue.
It's odd.
Yep. And everything he says about the house is correct. Everything he says about the house is true.
Hmm.
And he says about this room on the left, evil things have happened in that room involving a tremendous amount of blood.
Oh.
So Bob starts to do research into the history of the house. Paranormal witness pairs up Bob's investigation into the house's history with Lisa doing laundry in the basement. They play it as if
like
these...
cut between?
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. They play it as if these two things are literally happening at the same time.
Yeah.
Which I was watching and being like, no, they didn't. I just don't believe you. Lisa goes into the basement to do laundry, and she says that while she's down there, she smells birthing fluid.
Ew, okay.
That's what she said.
All right.
As Bob is upstairs researching the house and discovers that during that mysterious gap I left between mm-hmm. 1910 and 1988,
yeah.
there was a doctor mm. who lived in that house and was known for doing illegal abortions.
Mm-hmm.
And he was Kristen, he was killing babies.
Oh.
So then Father Ron calls again, or Bob calls Father Ron. Who knows? They're on the phone.
Yeah.
Father Ron.
Look, he gets Father Ron on the horn either way.
They're able to chat. And Father Ron says to look for a void in the house. Is there a room that's not on the floor plan in the house,
ooh.
Bob? Is there a place that's inaccessible?
What's with Father
Bob?
Ron?
Mm. Well, this immediately pings in Bob Cranmer's head that, yes, I think there is something up with the house.
Yeah.
That coat closet where the cord just wraps around the light and doesn't dangle down.
Mm-hmm.
He goes to that coat closet and demolishes the back wall, finding
badass
a hidden space, a void. He finds in there something that we might be familiar with.
Oh.
He finds a bird skeleton.
Oh.
Mm.
Okay.
Finds a bird skeleton and a piece of paper. A piece of paper featuring the image of the horned demon, Moloch.
I love that name.
M-O-L-E-C-H is mm-hmm. how it's described on the show. Though I'm familiar with Moloch from elsewhere.
Oh.
Which I will explain later.
all in due time.
M-O-L-O-C-H.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Here's what he says, Bob. Because
mm-hmm.
He has this piece of paper with Moloch.
Right.
Drawn on it. He says, they offered up their children, and those who had no children would buy little ones from poor people and cut their throats as if they were young birds. He goes, like, there was something written on it from the Old Testament. And then he reads that, and then he goes, it reminded me of something. And then I realized it was from the Old Testament.
Okay.
All right.
It reminded you of what it is?
Yeah. And it turns out that it is from the Old Testament. It's from the Canaanites. Mm-hmm. I don't know anything about the whatever.
Okay.
And they worshipped Moloch. There was a statue to Moloch once. This is, I guess, described in the Bible. He was made out of metal, and there's a big fireplace at the base of it where they would do sacrifices of children and babies. So Bob decides now that the doctor mm-hmm. who had lived there worshipped Moloch.
Wow.
And was doing those abortions not because people were in danger or, you know, like
needed them.
He was doing them to sacrifice those children, and the bodies were definitely burned in that old furnace in the basement.
Okay.
All of that is now a fact.
Yes.
And now the goo that they found is associated with giving birth. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Then they hear a screaming from their son upstairs, and they run up, and the walls
He's giving birth.
You see, the walls are dripping blood.
Mm.
It is around this time that Lisa starts to have mental issues. She starts writing on the walls. She says this herself on mm-hmm. false witness or whatever.
Paranormal witness.
Paranormal witness. She starts scrawling, "This is our house," all over the walls. According to Wikipedia, she and two of their children experienced serious mental issues, which would require hospitalization.
Real quick, was this all happening in one afternoon, you're saying? Like, he broke down that wall in the closet and found the Moloch painting.
Right.
Then blood was dripping from his son's. Is this all like in the same day?
Sure.
And then she starts writing on the walls?
Yeah, like... yeah, definitely. No, this is, I think, over the course of like years.
Okay.
Like months and years.
Okay.
Like, this is, yeah. In 2003, their oldest son attacked Bob and there were arrests made. All charges were eventually dropped. Mm-hmm. It seems like there was like unhappiness in the house that is genuinely documented.
Mm-hmm.
Bob's elderly aunt had been living with them and she was found dead in her bed of natural causes. That's listed on the ghost website as if that's tied to Moloch. It says that some paranormal researchers from Penn State got involved.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I know the researchers.
Do you?
I sure do. Ryan Buell from Paranormal State. Wait, you know what? Did you say researchers from Paranormal State or did you say Penn State?
Oh, I don't know. Now? I'm not sure. They are from Penn State, but there's a very good chance I might have said Paranormal State.
If you said Paranormal State, my reaction is so stupid.
Researchers from Paranormal State University.
I heard you say that and I thought you were saying like the real college and you were being like coy. Like some researchers from Penn State came and I was being like, oh, I know who, but you literally said...
I don't know. I don't know what I said, to be quite honest.
You probably did. I spent so much time today.
Yeah.
I was like ripping my hair out, trying to find the episode, which doesn't exist, of Paranormal State, where they go to this house.
Oh.
Because there were these references to the Paranormal State team coming and researching the house. So I just assumed that meant... Oh,
they
on
did
the
an
show.
Episode. No.
It was before they had a show. It was in 2015 and the show started 2017. So I was like going through their Wikipedia. Excuse me. Sorry. 2005?
Yeah. Okay, good. Yeah, I was going to say it started in 2017.
No, that doesn't
seem possible.
No, it's not. Sorry. Okay. So I was going through their episode listings, like trying to read between the lines. Like anything that says Pennsylvania, I was Googling that title and looking into it more
because
I so wanted it to be a thing and it wasn't.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
they did go and investigate it.
Yes. I was kind of impressed, honestly, that like I didn't know anything about the show Paranormal State or who those people were. I know. You and I used to watch that a lot with you.
Yes.
I think in my head I've kind of combined that show with Zach Bagans because it's a similar vibe.
Yeah.
But like they had a psychic named Chip Coffey who had a pet pig or something.
Sure. I don't know about the pet pig.
Didn't he? Or maybe he talked to a pig once. Or maybe I was looking at a picture of a pig while the show was on and I combined them.
You could be right, but I don't remember that.
Anyway, I remember that show and I was really actually kind of impressed from the Wikipedia article that it was like, paranormal investigators from Pennsylvania State University who went to this house. The Cranmer house to try to investigate the demon Moloch.
Yeah.
And all these ghosts or whatever. And then went on to have their own show.
Right.
I actually was kind of impressed. I was like, oh, they've been doing that for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know. I guess I assumed that these paranormal shows are assembled in a lab.
I mean,
putting together a boy band.
Yeah. I think some of them are, but some of them aren't. And they were an existing team who, it was all students from Penn State who put that thing together.
That's interesting.
And then got in touch with, some older psychics, Chip Coffey and Michelle Billanger.
Whoa.
They also did a lot of work with Lorraine Warren. And then it's a whole thing, but Ryan, who's like the head of that, ended up getting arrested for fraud and had a lot of like addiction issues. And I've checked up on him recently.
Yeah.
And he's clean and doing better.
Oh, good. I'm very glad to hear that. Yeah. I read his Wikipedia a little bit today.
Yeah.
And it was like he was sort of like conning people for a while.
Yeah.
It seemed like he was just stealing money.
He was putting together paranormal conventions and then canceling them and not refunding them.
Right.
But
right,
he was in the major throes of addiction.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'm glad he's doing
better. Yeah.
All right. So, okay. So, Father Ron is now showing up to expel this demon entity. So they do like an exorcism. Paranormal witness shows them in the basement fighting a demon.
Yeah.
Insane.
Naturally.
Yeah. Evidently in the book that Bob Cranmer would go on to write about this, he says that the movie The Passion of the Christ from director Mel Gibson played a significant role
yes.
in cleansing the house. but whatever. They do a fairly by the book exorcism,
mm-hmm.
where it is very much like the power of Christ compels you.
Yeah.
Like it's everything you've heard from The Exorcist. And it just works.
Right.
It's just... It
does a trick.
Run of the mill. It's like a plumber being like, well, we'll try the snake first.
Yeah.
And if that doesn't work, we'll try this. It's like, oh, just do these steps and it'll just happen. It'll be fine.
This is your workhorse exorcism. This gets it done 90% of the time.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah. Finally, the house has been cleansed. And Bob Cranmer is so weird. They do this talking head thing where he goes like, couldn't believe it. The house was completely cleansed. But then I was thinking more and more about Father Ron. How did he know how to do this? How did he know so much about my house? I was like, oh, we're going to get some awesome reveal about Father Ron.
Yeah.
So they show that Bob Cranmer goes to visit Father Ron. And they do a dramatic, you know, reenactment. And they have actor Bob going like, how did you know? How could you figure this all out, Father? You priest? And then the priest actor goes, I had a little help.
From upstairs?
No, they cut to real Father Ron who goes, I have a friend who knew a lot about the house and could tell me a lot about it.
Oh, like, okay.
That's what a mundane.
It's a little anticlimactic, but.
Although, you know what, I said that really because it's primarily funny.
Yeah.
It still is the same. It still is like,
yeah, that this
I had a little help from a friend.
Mm-hmm.
And then they cut to the real guy going, yeah, no, I've got a friend who, I consider her a mystic, and she could sense a lot of things about the house.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was like, oh, cool. So what's up? What? So Father Ron, Catholic priest guy, you have a friend who you consider a mystic who knew a lot about the house. I can't wait to hear more about that. Period. End of sentence. They just move on.
Oh.
That's the explanation for how Father Ron knew.
It's like that opens up a whole new door.
Doesn't it?
Yeah, and absolutely.
They don't touch on. They act like saying, yeah, I have a friend who's a psychic.
Yeah.
Is a sufficient explanation that does not beg any more questioning.
It's disappointing.
So disappointing. I couldn't believe it. he also, Father Ron goes like, you know, yes, the house is clean. But you know what? I think that there could still be more happening. I think there could still be more happening.
Mm.
Leave that spooky door open. Except in 2018, Bob Cranmer in an interview goes like, no, the house is totally clean. We're going to make it an Airbnb or whatever. Yeah. It's like, okay. Just burst every bubble.
Totally.
Just burst every bubble we got. Last thing really is about this article from the Post Gazette, where Bob Cranmer talks about opening the house as a bed and breakfast, which is now going to be called the Brownsville Roadhouse.
Yeah.
In the house, it's all decorated to look kind of Civil War era.
Mm-hmm.
He's got a bunch of antiques in there. It looks kind of interesting.
Yeah.
And evidently the doctor's office where he did all those, abortions to feed Moloch.
Right.
They've got jars of formaldehyde on the mantle and a portrait of a woman.
Right.
Because that represents the woman in white who died from a botched abortion. And Bob Cranmer said, I saw the ghost. When I stopped in an antique shop and saw the painting, I said, this is her. So he put the painting in the blue room.
So odd.
So it's... He's like, I don't want people coming in with a Ouija board and stirring everything up again.
Exactly.
But then he's also got jars of formaldehyde. And he says that woman in the painting is a ghost.
So I guess I read a different article than you about them turning it into a bed and breakfast because that wasn't in the one that I read.
Okay.
But I had the same takeaway where he was like, it's not haunted anymore. Anybody can stay here except for ghost hunters and psychics because we worked so hard to clear it out of here. I had to watch Apocalypto, I can't tell you how many times, or whatever it was, Passion of the Christ, and we finally got it out of there, and he doesn't want to bring that element back in. But we have a room totally dedicated to that.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like a theme
loosely
room, basically.
Themed.
It has the book in there that people can read, because his book is called The Demon of Brownsville Road, or whatever.
Right.
And the house it does look cool from the pictures at, I think it's brownsvilleroadhouse.com. It does look cool, but the weird thing is, it sounds like it's all over the place. So it's not just like one era. The hallway is World War II themed.
Oh.
Then there's a room that has a 1950s TV and a computer next to it. Then there's the room that's themed as like what we just said. And then there's a room with modern decor and a nautical theme.
Oh, okay. So I guess what? you just wanted to have different rooms that have different styles.
Yeah, I guess so. But it's odd.
It is odd.
You know? And in the article that I read, which there will be a link in the show notes, he says that, you know, they got the ghost cleared out and everything. They're making the bed and breakfast. And then he realized that the popularity of this thing isn't dying down anytime soon. So you may as well shop it to some movie houses. I mean, I don't know. He's very like, yes, but no.
Right. Yes, of course.
About it, which is very weird. And there are some people out there who are very no about it.
Right.
So there is a lot of criticism and backlash about everything that Will just said, that Bob Cranmer says in the book and has been on TV and talking about it. And the thing is that I think is a little bit different about this story than some others, that he's talking about semi-recent history. Like, there are a lot of ghost stories where you can be like, oh yeah, back in the 1800s, people lived here and those people are haunting it.
Right.
He's talking about people like, you know, sacrificing babies to Satan who lived here, he's saying, in the 1940s or whatever.
Yeah.
So they have living relatives who are calling BS on the story.
Yeah.
So first of all, we touched on a little bit, just like the way that he's telling the story is a little bit like judgy and like crappy and not cool. So I haven't thought about these in the context of a scary thing in a while, but the way that they were talking about a doctor performing illegal abortions, like that's so inherently, like,
right.
That's a scary thing. That's like an evil thing.
Yeah, he's only trying to like...
Yeah, like that.
He's...
I'm not saying like, I know there are situations where it has not been, you know,
of course,
or whatever, and it could be really, really dangerous,
yeah.
But on its face... Just being like this, just saying that, you don't need to say anymore.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, you hear that a doctor
is the equivalent of a serial killer.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it's like not the case necessarily. Right. Like women needed access to abortion.
Yeah.
I don't know if this is with this dude's deal, but I'm just saying like.
Well, I did
just
read a little bit.
Using that as shorthand,
right.
Is like. Meh.
I did find a Reddit thread that maybe I'll link as well, where somebody was pointing out that like of the era when this would have been happening, there were things called Comstock laws,
mm-hmm.
which were essentially banning any material that was deemed to be dangerous.
Yeah.
And a lot of that included stuff about like, you know, contraception
mm-hmm.
and abortion. So
right.
Like everything was like, don't talk about that.
Mm-hmm.
Don't tell people how to do that. Don't tell people how to be safe. Don't so like
right.
It was necessary to do a quote unquote illegal abortion because
right.
people were getting themselves in all kinds of medical safety, all kinds of trouble.
Exactly.
So like there are various there are a multitude of reasons like that are like financial, that are medical, that are, you know, I don't know, whatever.
Anything.
Exactly.
But just, yeah, I just thought it was interesting reading this about how like it wasn't a story. Well, I guess it kind of was about how he was sacrificing them to Moloch or
yeah.
whatever. But just anyway, I made my point already. It's not on its face like,
yes.
Oh,
right.
You know what I mean? But he presents it that way. So let me see. Okay, so there is an article in the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette from 2014 where members of the three families who lived in that house before the Cranmers did are calling BS. So he says in his book that he has firsthand accounts of these families experiencing paranormal activity as well.
Mm.
And the people in this article are saying that he heard that from their, or he says he heard that from their parents who have since passed. So they're not totally sure that he's telling the truth even because their parents aren't there to verify his story or refute it. And he says, well, you weren't there when they told me. So, you know, they did and you might not be right.
Well, just to play devil's advocate,
sure.
That could be true.
It certainly could be true.
Yeah.
But it seemed, you know, they're just saying, this was never a thing.
Yeah.
I don't really know what he's talking about. And this guy seems like a character to me, from what I gathered. He seems like an odd duck.
Okay.
So I'm inclined to be a little bit doubtful of him.
in what way?
Well, first of all, this story is bonkers.
What? There's goo on the floor.
Yeah, there's goo on the floor.
Yeah.
The walls are bleeding. There's Moloch. I do have a little bias against him because I don't like this whole anti-abortion thing that he's doing.
Well, that's really the big thing. Yes. Mm-hmm. And I understand that.
So I'm already side-eyeing him as a kook.
I understand that, but like...
And playing the Passion of the Christ for 6 months on a loop to cleanse the house. This is very weird.
Yeah, that's very weird. But like, you know, we often celebrate people who say they've experienced stuff like this otherwise.
Yeah, I do, but I don't trust this guy.
Okay.
There are other people who I'm like, oh, benefit of the doubt. And more I read about Bob Cranmer,
yeah.
I was like, I don't know about this Bob.
I also read that he punched his son in the face.
That's not great.
It's not great. I don't know what happened.
Yeah, I know. I don't know the context, but it doesn't sound great.
No.
So these families were interviewed in this article. There's a woman named Karen Dwyer who lived in the house with her mom and her grandparents for 7 years, along with her brother. And she said she never experienced anything crazier than there being squirrels in the wall.
Oh, okay.
But she heard them scuttering.
I ain't heard no scuttering.
This is a quote from her from the article. My mother never said anything about the house being haunted. And his mother would be who Cranmer was saying told him that it was. So she's saying, my mother never said anything about the house being haunted. My grandmother never said anything about the house being haunted. And my grandfather never said anything about the house being haunted. If he wants to go and write it from 1988 and go forward, do it. I don't care. But if you want to lie about other people and things that happened before that, well, no, that's not right.
Interesting.
Her brother Ken and Uncle Walter also said they never experienced anything in the house. And Walter points out that in his book, Cranmer said that his sister, so the mom, told him that their family dog could sense when there was a spirit around. And the dog was kind of following it from room to room. But he says they never had a family dog.
Oh.
So it's just like total bunk. The people who bought it from them, from that family, the Joyces, said that they never experienced anything either. And so they're just like, what is this guy talking about? I don't understand where he's pulling it from. But Cranmer says that the Joyces hated the Wagners, who I was just talking about, for selling them the haunted house. He says, and this is a quote from Wikipedia, people are always concerned that they can be held legally liable if they do not reveal to buyers problems of a spiritual nature with a house, which I discovered is not the case in Pennsylvania. Their reactions are obviously intended to cover up the deception used in selling the house, both in 1979 and 1988. The house was not officially sold in 1941 by the original owners, but was purchased via a sheriff's sale. The house sat empty then for an extended period and became known as the haunted house by the local children who ventured into it.
Hmm.
So why would, I don't know, I feel like there's some mixed messaging there. He's saying they hated each other, kind of,
right,
and yet they are somehow banding together,
right,
and both like locking down on a story of this not being haunted to be able to cover up the fact that they shouldn't have sold it to people as being a haunted house. Why wouldn't they, you know?
Yeah.
Why do they care about the other person?
I'm trying to, all right, so if you're going to do the mental backflips to turn this into a plausible thing.
Right.
Family one sells the house to family two, doesn't say that it's haunted.
Right.
Family two experiences haunting stuff and is like, oh my God, what did you do to me? And they're like, listen, I'm sorry, I had to sell the house to you. I had to do whatever I could just to get rid of it.
Yeah.
You should do the same thing to somebody else.
I guess so.
And so that way there is some sort of indoctrination.
Yeah, like we're just going to lock it down, say that we didn't know it was haunted, and that story we're both sticking to, because I guess it would weaken the story if either one of them says it is haunted.
Now,
so that's true. But
shouldn't they have come forward to Bob Cranmer and been like, listen, you're now the third to enter into
our pact.
Our pact.
Mm-hmm.
Keep this on the DL.
Right.
Sell this to some fourth chump.
Right.
Did they ever make him any such offer?
I don't know. It doesn't seem like it.
Then it seems unlikely that that's the scheme that they're running.
Probably not. And again, if he says that they hated each other,
right,
that doesn't suggest an in cahootsness.
Yes.
So I don't know about this Cranmer. I don't know.
He's got a cool haunted house and he needs it to.
Yeah.
Quite frankly, I don't think it even matters. I think most people aren't going to care about any of this controversy that you're going to talk about.
No,
they're
no,
just
no.
going to go, it's a cool, spooky house.
Yeah, absolutely.
Can I stay in the nautical room?
Yeah. The nautical room. It's just so weird.
It's weird.
So now let's get to the story about what he calls in his book, I guess, Dr. M performing those illegal abortions. That story comes purely from the visions of that medium who was friends with the priest.
Oh.
There is no other evidence for that or anything. It's just that medium had that idea, and then that became law, basically. Her name was Connie Valenti, And she divined that happened. And Jill said that the doctor and his wife were kind of messes, big drinkers, and that the doctor wasn't a good doctor overall. So the thing is, there was a doctor who lived there with his family at one point, and you can find it. I'm not going to use their real last name just because, like, why further besmirch them?
Yeah, sure.
But you can find it. I mean, they were interviewed for this article. But so there was a doctor who lived there at one point, and his family members say that the stories about the illegal abortions just aren't true. And actually, the timeline doesn't really add up anyway, which you could say is kind of, like, nitpicky and not the point, but... It's a further
there's more
inconsistency
unraveling.
In his story.
There are a lot of threads
the motion
to pull.
Of unraveling. Yeah. The book says that he performed them there in the 20s and 30s, but the doctor's grandson says that the doctor actually moved there like in the mid 1940s.
Mm.
So just like not quite right. However, somewhat weirdly, a granddaughter of that doctor reached out and contacted Cranmer after she read the book and said that although she had never heard anything about these operations, that her grandfather did have, quote, an evil demeanor and had thrown shoes at her.
No.
I wouldn't like that.
I wouldn't want to have a shoe thrown at me.
I don't want that from my grandpappy, from my poppy. So... Cranmer did not like this pushback.
No.
He's not liking people saying that he's full of beans. And so he offered to pay for a lie detector test for himself as long as these adult children of the previous owners would do it too.
Oh.
And I don't think that happened.
Oh, that would be awesome.
They were probably just like, no, what? Like, leave me alone. I got the vibe from this article that they're just kind of like, they don't even want to be bothered by it, basically. They're just like, what the hell? It seems like there might be a one-sided battle a little bit where he's like, how dare you? And they're just like, I just don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, we're just saying
you're
making stuff up. I don't really care otherwise.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think that they're that interested in it. And part of why I think that is that he read that article in the Gazette in 2014, and then he responded to them. He gave them a comment that they published 3 days later in an letters to the editor section, I think. He said, any author should relish an article about their book by a major newspaper, positive or negative. However, the recent coverage of my book was over the top. The front page Sunday article clearly sought to discredit the story, its basis in Christian faith, and its controversial topics. I've dealt with the press enough to know that when an article is to have a slant, nothing one says can change it. I spent almost 2 hours on the phone with the reporter, successfully addressing every objection, yet only a few brief comments from me were published. Once I determined that the reporter's intent was negative, I simply braced myself. But if it prompts more reading of the book, so much the better.
He also said that, like, for people that try to book the B&B, if you want to know about the haunted history or whatever, guess what? I'm not going to tell it to you. You'll have to read the book.
Oh, my God.
I'm like, aha. It's all, you know, it's vertical integration. You can live in the subject of the book. You know what I mean? Like,
but it's so, it doesn't make sense to me. Like, it'd be better vertical integration if you were, like, why make that room, like, a Demon of Brownsville room, but be like, but we don't allow ghost hunters here? Is it a wink-wink thing? And kind of like, you know, trying to draw people there because they're not supposed to do it? But that's just lame.
Well, yeah.
It's just, I don't see why that would work any better than just straight up being like, yeah, this is the Brownsville house. Even if you don't lean into it super duper hard and you do just have it decorated in all, it is all antique furniture, but it's from different eras. Maybe not in that modern nautical room, not sure.
Yeah.
But you can have it look however you want. You could brand it however you want. Like, the website isn't spooky or anything like that. But it's just so weird. And maybe it's just a throwaway thing that I'm latching on to too much. Maybe it's just a thing he said in the article. But it's weird to specify, like, this is not for ghost hunting. Ghost hunters aren't welcome.
Right. Like, well, here's what it is, because I think even the people who own the Watcher House are like, we own the Watcher House, and we're not happy about it.
Right.
So it always has to have that vibe, right? Because if you owned a haunted house, that would not be something that you should enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
So he has to. Mm. He has no option but to be like, my house is haunted, and it really stinks.
Yeah.
Really stinks. Yeah. And, get a lot of bad attention, but you can buy a room if you want.
Yeah, I hate all the attention.
But I hate that. I hate all this attention I'm getting. Look at all this attention I'm getting. I hate it.
This is all about little old me. I'm so tired of it.
Ooh, get away from me. Back off with all that money and attention.
Seems like a...
Selling the rights to New Line Cinema.
Yeah, and, right. He was like, I realized that, well, the... He just, it's like he wants to prove that it's real, maybe by saying he's not trying to lean into all this publicity. Correct. He didn't do this for publicity. So it's just so silly to me, though. Like, I realize it wasn't dying down, so I may as well shop a movie.
Yeah.
Like, come on, dude.
I know. It's true.
Yeah.
And it's amazing that that works, you know?
I guess. Like, I mean, it's a good story.
It's entertaining.
I don't know that it, I don't think it doesn't work in this case. I don't think that that's generally a tactic that I would say works.
Right.
But I think that this story is interesting enough that it's like, even though this guy's a weirdo, like, that doesn't really matter for a new line. You know what I mean? So like, yeah, we'll do the movie.
Yeah,
we'll
exactly. I don't care. Like, we could market this movie and, you know, maybe make it for $5 million and get $20
million. Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Yeah, it's sweet.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's complicated, right? Like, what is the bare minimum you have to do to make that your reality? That you're like, my house is haunted, and now it's just, now it's got a Wikipedia article. Now people talk about it online. Now Paranormal Witness is doing an episode.
Mm-hmm.
What is the bare minimum you have to do?
What do you mean?
What I mean is, let's say that this house had zero paranormal activity before 1988 when the Cranmers moved in.
Mm-hmm.
Is this something, is this a... is this a reputation they had to build up over the course of 2 decades? How long does it take for your fake haunted house to be known as a real haunted house?
I don't know, because, well, first of all, he said that, you know, that there were kids who would talk about this being a haunted house during the period that it was abandoned. So maybe the seed is kind of planted there that this is like a creepy house or something.
Right.
And maybe he happened to move into it and he was like, let's punch it up a little bit.
Maybe.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
I mean, if he
this
did...
is already kind of like a known legend house in the area.
Sure.
I don't think it was like in a huge way, but just like kids playing around. Maybe he was one of those kids who played around in there.
Well, he did
say... now I live in that house? Right.
He did say that he wanted the house ever since he was a kid.
Exactly.
And he kind of got it.
Yeah.
And now he's going to do whatever he wants with it in some sense.
Yeah, so maybe it's like, I got that house on Brownsville Road or whatever, and it's like, you know, we could make this a haunted... story, and or who knows, like maybe they do believe it's haunted, and because it sounds like this family had a lot of turmoil.
True.
And maybe they've attributed that to a haunting or something like that. I really don't know. I don't know.
There was something that I read as well where he was like, it never occurred to me that the psychological trauma people were suffering in the house could be tied to a paranormal event or something like that. Like, he's like, I don't like to think that way. I never would have thought that, but I guess that's the case.
What was your impression of him?
You know, honestly, like my gut reaction, I'm not going to lie, was to be like, when I saw somebody on Reddit point out the whole, like, it seems like an anti-abortion angle and he was a Republican politician.
Yeah.
My immediate reaction to that is like, oh, that stinks. You're right.
Yeah.
And then I go, well, wait, maybe that's not fair. You know, like,
right. That doesn't mean that it's not necessarily true.
Exactly.
Right.
Like, people are more complicated than that, hopefully. Mm-hmm. There could be a multitude of reasons why he believes the thing he believes or does the things he does. What the hell do I know? Mm-hmm. So ultimately, I ended up just being like, I don't know this dude. I know that people can be opportunistic about having a haunted house or something like that.
Yeah.
But I don't think I care about that. Mm-hmm. I think I'm more amused by it than anything, to be like,
oh yeah,
oh, there's Bobby Cranmer with his haunted house that he's gonna try to rent rooms out of.
Right.
Sure is a problem to have that. Or what?
Yeah.
Like, it's just like, it just feels opportunistic, but at the end of the day, what the hell do I care?
Oh, well, yeah, you don't have to care, but just like, I was wondering what you thought of him, whether he seemed like somebody who had like his head on straight or was being opportunistic and was a little out there or something like that. And who knows, we don't know him, but just curious.
Right. I mean, he's one of the talking heads on Paranormal Witness,
right.
And he seemed, you know, visually together enough. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't feel like I really have an opinion of him.
Yeah.
I just feel like, you know, I don't know.
I always
feel like this stuff is made up.
Yeah,
and,
I know. Yeah.
And I don't know. I can see how there can be angles here, both monetarily and politically.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
Totally.
Yeah.
It's quite a tale.
It really is. It's interesting, and I always like hearing stories like this, if for no other reason than that it's just interesting that they pop up as frequently as they do. You know, we've talked about how the zeitgeist of the time can influence people to want to say that their house is haunted or something like that. That, like, you know, in the 70s, we had a lot of movies that were about the devil.
Right.
And, you know, there being demons in your house or whatever. But this story starts in 1988.
Right.
You know, and that's not really, mm-hmm. like by this point, we were already.
It's not prime time for that.
It's not prime time for that.
It's like The Exorcist had just come out.
We're already into parody of that
right.
timeline. Like Ghostbusters had been out for 4 years at that point. Mm-hmm. You know, like, so it's not like it was super in vogue at the time to say that there's a demon named Moloch that is haunting you and your family.
True. But it's like, it's forever intriguing.
I guess that's true, yeah.
And if you're, I mean, I don't know, but maybe if he's super religious, like, that is part of that world, like an understanding, even light, but just like an understanding and somewhat belief in like the devil or demons and things like that. So depending on, you know, what his deal is, maybe that's something that he has in his awareness
yeah.
on a semi-regular basis. Who knows?
Who knows? The one thing I think I would really want to know more about, because I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
He said when he ripped out the wall of that closet, he found a bird skeleton and a piece of paper with Moloch drawn on it.
Yeah, yeah.
Show me the paper.
Yes.
Show me the paper and show me how it's not something you could have made in 1988.
Right.
You know, I want to see that piece of paper.
Did you try to look for it?
I didn't think of it until just now.
Okay.
Because I just was like, I was just treating this like a story.
Yeah, totally.
You know, but now that I think about it, that is a big, there's no evidence of these things. Like, right. if you want to be a cynic, if you want to be a skeptic, it is very convenient that the way you experience a haunting results in no evidence,
mm-hmm,
you
right.
know? And I'm not saying that means that they're not true, but
no,
it
but
probably it, means they're not true.
And I totally.
He said he found yeah. a piece of paper with Moloch on it.
Right.
So where's the paper?
I don't know. At a quick search of Demon Brownsville Moloch paper, I'm not coming up with anything. But again, that doesn't mean that that isn't out there. I'm not sure.
I'm very curious about that. I would like to find that.
I would think if you, I don't know, to call out something that's like a physical and viewable item and not uh-huh. produce it is weird. So I would think that maybe it's in his book or something.
If he says that he had to destroy it,
okay.
I won't believe him,
mm-hmm.
and I'm going to say that this probably. Is a scheme.
Yeah.
If he has it,
mm-hmm.
if it doesn't look real as hell, I'm going to say it's all a scheme.
I mean, what would even make it look real?
I don't know.
Yeah.
That's on him.
Yeah.
He's got the burden to...
I know, but I'm just saying, what yeah. to you would be like, uh-huh, okay,
well, that,
now I'm listening.
That also boils down to, like, I'm not sure that I can ever step out of my skeptic shoes.
Yeah.
If you show me a photograph of a ghost...
Mm-hmm.
No matter what,
yeah.
in my head, I'm going to go, you could Photoshop that.
Yeah.
We're officially at a point in time
mm-hmm,
where things can be created
anything.
So authentically. I will never believe in ghosts unless a ghost appears to me.
Yeah.
That is the only way I will ever believe.
Yeah, totally.
As unfortunate as that is, because I would love to get lost in this
mm-hmm.
and really get this overwhelming sense that it's all true.
Yeah.
I used to feel that way when I was a kid, that mm-hmm. sort of sense of like, what if, and it was spooky and it was fun.
Yeah.
And I can't have that fun anymore because I'm too cynical
mm-hmm.
and because I know, I feel like I could make a ghost photo.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
You definitely could.
And it's just yeah. like, yeah, I don't know. So it's up to Dr. Chammy or whatever his name is.
It's Dr. Chammy.
Dr. Chammy.
Yeah.
It's up to Dr. Chammy to show me a Moloch paper.
Yeah.
And for me to feel like that's
real. And make
real.
It good.
Yeah. Make it good, man.
Yeah.
If I really would not be shocked if he said he had to destroy it.
Yeah. That makes total sense.
Because it never existed.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
Absolutely.
I don't know. I'm not going to call him a liar.
I mean, I kind of did earlier.
I know, but I don't know what the laws are.
I don't know.
I don't know. Who the hell knows?
Yeah, the laws?
You can't libel people and say that they're scamming. You can't say stuff like that. You got to give people the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah. I don't know. The people in the newspaper did.
They did?
They said that he made it up and stuff, I think.
All right, then he's a liar.
Yeah, I mean, William.
Dr. Chammy. Dr. Plus, I know your name.
What are you talking about? People call.
I don't know. I don't know.
I wouldn't worry about the legal implications of this.
I don't know. I just don't want to see, you know, another headline. Guide to the Unknown slams Dr. Chammy. You know, I don't want to see myself on the front page of the New York Times again.
Not again.
Not again.
And it seems like it's not going away, so
yep.
we may as well pitch the story to,
yeah.
you know, some crime drama.
You know.
Seems like it's not fading, so I guess we'll present our libel problems with Dr. Chammy to, you know, all rise.
I didn't want to have to, but
new on CBS, I believe.
It's a shame I had to do this, but I signed $1 million deal
yeah.
to get the Dr. Chammy story. Chammy v. Rogers.
It's not going away.
It's coming out soon.
Chammy v. Raj.
I'm so sorry I had to do that.
Look, if it's what they want, it's what they want, and it's out of my hands.
Give the people what they want.
That's right.
So what? The other place Moloch appeared, real quick.
Okay.
Moloch,
Right.
Moloch was, it was in the back of my mind somewhere. It was annoying me.
No, me too.
I was getting an itch. What is Moloch from? What is Moloch from? Moloch appeared in Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Oh, okay.
And had a robot body. Okay. Oh. But that wasn't quite it. Why is Moloch bothering me? Sleepy Hollow, the TV show. Moloch was the original big bad that summoned the four horsemen of the apocalypse, one of which was the Headless Horseman.
Excellent.
Up.
Excellent.
And out.
All rise.
Moloch. Together we rise.
Together we rise move with Moloch.
Out. Together we rise. Move out, my horseman. Moloch, big
there
bad guy. They took care of him pretty handily, I think.
Well, you know, once Ichabod acclimated himself to 2015 culture, he was really making moves.
Ooh, new reboot, Ichabod and Chammy.
Ooh.
Yeah.
What would I think Ichabod would be very skeptical of Chammy.
What is his name? Chamney?
Chammy.
Camney?
Chanmer.
Chanmer.
Yeah.
Chandler.
Right?
Cranmer.
Cranmer, that's right.
Because Cranberry and Mermaid.
Yes.
Our mnemonic from the beginning of the episode.
Cranberry and Murder.
Cranberry and Murder.
Mm-hmm.
I'll have my murder with a set of cranberries. That's my Thanksgiving-based true crime show.
Yeah. Well, I'll be watching.
All right.
And I hope you guys will be as well. Thank you for listening and watching this week. You can find us everywhere on social media at GTTUpod. Please leave a review for the show, a 5-star review if you like it. On Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts or wherever it's easy for you, just you letting people know that you like the show is awesome and makes them inclined to listen to it, of course.
Yes, you can also go to podchaser.com/GTTUpod where you can not only review the show, you can even review individual episodes. And you can follow us individually as creators to follow our journey through doing podcasts, which is very fun.
Yeah.
It's a fun way to sort of like interact with shows and creators in a way that hasn't really existed before.
Right.
And thank you so much to people that have written reviews since last time. We got a very nice new review on Apple Podcasts.
Oh, great.
From ASDF Zombie. Saying, incredible collection of curiosities. After binging numerous paranormal and spooky podcasts, I thought I had run out of my favorite content until I came across this podcast. Mm. The chemistry is obviously incredible. They give hilarious commentary on freaky, scary, and strange stories or topics, and it reminds me that there is so much left out there in this world to learn about. Mm-hmm. I love the pop culture references as well. I'm a listener for life.
Aww.
How about that?
That's great. Thank you so much. What
Thank
a nice
you very
review.
Much. Yeah, so please join the people who are saying nice things about Guide to the Unknown. It makes us feel very warm inside.
Yeah, that's really great. Thank you so much. We super appreciate it.
Yes, now that we're at the end of the episode as well, please, we'd like to remind you that over on patreon.com/GTTUpod, you can get bonus material by becoming a Netherworld Warrior. That is a tier starting at $4 a month, but you can edit that field, put in whatever number you would like.
Yeah, and some people have, and we appreciate it like crazy. So thank you so much.
1,000%. And that also gives you access to the exclusive podcast and then the Netherworld Dispatch, a new episode of which is out right this second. Mm-hmm. So go check that out to hear our thoughts on the new movie, Doctor Sleep, the sequel to The Shining.
Yep.
So thank you all so much for hanging out with us. We really hope you had a good time. If you'd like to reach out to us individually, of course, please feel free to do so.
Yes, I'm at Chillin' Kristen on Instagram and Twitter.
I'm at The Myth Traveler. So we will see you next week when we return to the world of mystery and make-believe. But until that time comes, we must travel.
Back to the Netherworld, go we. Excellent.
How do you feel about that?
I feel great.
Murder in America is a true crime podcast that covers stories from all 50 states, including stories of mass shootings, serial killers, and lesser-known murders. Do you find yourself doing more research after listening to a true crime show? Well, Courtney and I used to do the same thing, and that's why we created Murder in America. Our podcast dives deep into each case. Our storytelling will make you feel like you're right there within the case with us, watching it all play out, and we do not shy away from the graphic details. If you're a fan of true crime, then listen to Murder in America on Spotify now.